M-A.
R-N-M-E-N-U.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hi, I'm Chase Crispin, the executive producer of Main Menu, heard on ACB Radio Mainstream. For those of you who don't know about Main Menu is a technology show, and we cover technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. Main Menu is heard weekly on ACB Radio Mainstream, and is also available for download on our website at www.mainmenu.acbradio.org. There are a lot of things that we've covered that have been quite popular, and that we get a lot of feedback on. Today in this podcast, you're going to hear just some of our major highlights that we covered on Main Menu during 2011. You might also hear just a little bit about what we have planned for Main Menu during 2012. If you don't know much about Main Menu, or maybe you haven't listened for a while, we certainly invite you to come and join us. You can first hear Main Menu on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, that's U.S. Eastern Time, every Friday night. You can listen to ACB Radio Mainstream by going to www.acbradio.org. Our shows are then made available on our website at mainmenu.acbradio.org. There, you can also subscribe to a podcast feed of our shows. Our shows are also picked up on many radio reading services around the world. We have also just announced a contest. If you would like to learn more about Main Menu and interact with other Main Menu listeners and the Main Menu staff, you might have an opportunity to win a pretty exciting prize. This prize is a 2-disc set. One disc contains the latest copy of the Non-Visual Desktop Access NVDA screen reader. It also contains the OCR plugin for NVDA and the enhancements to make NVDA work better in applications such as Microsoft Word. On this CD, you will also find all of the currently available tutorials on NVDA. The other CD will start the NVDA screen reader whenever it is placed in your CD-ROM drive. If you are somewhere on a computer that doesn't have a screen reader on it, you can put this CD in your CD drive and have instant access via speech, and if you connect one, a Braille display. This 2-disc set of the free NVDA screen reader plugins and tutorials will go to our 600th Twitter follower, and the 150th subscriber to the Main Menu Friends mailing list. To follow the official Main Menu Twitter account, visit www.twitter.com/mainmenu. That's www.twitter.com/mainmenu, which is all one word. If you would like to interact with the other Main Menu listeners and the Main Menu staff and get information about what's happening on Main Menu on a week-to-week basis, you can subscribe to our Main Menu Friends mailing list by sending a blank email to mm-friends-subscribe@acbradio.org. That's mm-friends-subscribe@acbradio.org. If you are either our 600th Twitter follower or our 150th mailing list subscriber, you will be eligible to receive this NVDA 2-disc set as a prize, as our thanks for your interest in our show. Now, let's go ahead and get into the Main Menu 2011 highlights, featuring me as executive producer of Main Menu and David Tanner as host of Main Menu, co-hosting this very special end-of-year show. And don't forget, if you're interested in Main Menu, please come to our website and check us out at mainmenu.acbradio.org. We hope you enjoy this part of our latest show, and if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, feel free to email us at mainmenu@acbradio.org.
Main Menu.
Well, I'm glad to have a co-host with me this evening, Mr. Chase Crispin, our executive producer. has joined us here for this evening on our special main menu for New Year's Eve. Hello, Chase.
Hello, David. It's good to be here this evening. This is a really exciting show. I hope you all enjoy it, and it's kind of nice to be in the co-host position.
Yeah, we'll have to see if we can do that every once in a while.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah, let us know whether you think this is something we ought to do more often, or maybe not so much. We thought we'd kind of do this together. Partially, I thought it would be good to do it together because on some of the highlights we're going to cover here on the highlights for 2011, Chase probably had more to do with arranging these, and he's even a part of a couple of these, and I thought it would be good to let him talk about those. And we've got quite a list here, and we'll try to get through all of the list if we can. If we can't, then we'll stop when time runs out. The first thing we have on the list is the transition from Jamie Pauls as the host of Main Menu to yours truly, David Tanner, as host, and Chase Crispin as the executive producer. That basically happened because Jamie was offered a job somewhere else, and it was necessary for him, if he wanted to go to that other position, to leave Main Menu as the host of Main Menu. Since Main Menu is a volunteer position, and the other position was a pay-for position, that seemed a logical decision for Jamie to make, and we all miss him very much, but we very much congratulating him on his new position.
And we've said this several times, but I think it's definitely worth going back and thanking Jamie again for his hard work for a couple of years, 2 to 3 years or so on Main Menu. He did a very nice job, took Main Menu through a lot of interesting segments, a lot of your probably good memories of Main Menu, so I think we should definitely thank Jamie for his years of service with us on Main Menu.
Definitely was a great host.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls. I've been the host and producer of Main Menu since May of 2009 and have been on the Main Menu team since August of 2008. Recently, an opportunity has come up that will require me to step away from Main Menu. This evening, you're going to meet two people. The first is the new executive producer of Main Menu.
Hello, Main Menu listeners. I'm Chase Crispin, and I know many of you know me from various things I've done here on Main Menu for the last year or two, or somewhere around there. But today I am very pleased to announce to all of you that I have accepted the position of the executive producer of Main Menu. Before I move on, I would just like to say that Main Menu is a show that has accomplished a lot of things over the last few years. Jamie Pauls, who I think every single one of you knows and knows does this job extremely well, has done a very, very good job hosting and producing Main Menu over the last 2 to 3 years. He has led Main Menu to be nearly a one-stop resource for people interested in finding out information about technology for the blind and visually impaired. For those of you who don't know me, I am a high school student, and I have been involved in Main Menu as part of the team for the last year or so, and I've been submitting things to Main Menu for a while before that. I'm really happy to have accepted the position of executive producer. This is a really great show, and I'm glad to be even more involved. One of the big things I want to do as executive producer is work with all of you, the listeners. So if you have any suggestions for the show, if there's something you like, something you don't like, if you have a segment idea, or even if you have a podcast you've already made, or you would like to record something to be aired on Main Menu, please do not hesitate to get in touch with me. I love to get in touch with listeners and see where you guys want the show to be. I'm really glad to be in this new role as executive producer. I am very excited for the opportunities that this show will have over the next several years as I'm executive producer. I have many ideas for the show, and I'm going to be working with the new Main Menu host, who is going to be the one responsible for putting the show together and editing it on a weekly basis. You're going to meet this new host here in just a few minutes, and I know you're going to be very glad to have this person hosting. It's someone you've all been familiar with on Main Menu for the last couple of years, and this person is going to do a wonderful job hosting, and I'm glad to be working with this new host.
Now it's time to introduce the new host of Main Menu, the voice that you will hear every week, just as you've heard my voice for over a year. Now, please make welcome our new host.
Hello, I'm David Tanner, and I am very pleased that Jamie has given me the opportunity to come by Main Menu today to talk to you a little bit and give you a little bit of background on myself as I take over next week the host position at Main Menu from Jamie as Jamie moves on to new and exciting endeavors. Now, I want to give you a little bit of a background on myself. I have a total of 26 years of experience in the assistive technology field. Prior to that, I was a school teacher for a few years. I sold real estate and was a real estate broker for a couple or so years, but then I got hung up on computers and assistive technology. And as I started to use assistive technology and now use assistive technology all day, every day, at work, at home, in recreation, and you name it, I am strongly hung up on having the best and latest in assistive technology. And I want you to know as much about it as I do, and maybe more, because guess what? None of us know everything there is to know about regular technology or assistive technology. And that's what we're here for at Main Menu. If you hear something on Main Menu that you thought we could have maybe done a little better job on, we'd be more than happy to hear from you. We'd like to hear from you what you like, what you don't like, and what you think was good, but maybe we could have done a little bit of a better job. And we are always looking for new ideas and new things to cover on Main Menu to inform you and your friends and neighbors about the latest and assistive technology for blind and visually impaired. So be sure you drop by the webpage and leave us a suggestion. Send us an email on the Main Menu Friends email list. And if you're not on that mailing list, hey, may I suggest that you get over to www.mainmenu.acbradio.org and join us on the Main Menu Friends mailing list. We promise to do our best to give you the best we can in information about what's going on today and what is coming up in the future.
Well, I think our most popular story that we have had on Main Menu this year was our panel on note takers. Now, this wasn't a very large panel. It was Jamie Pauls, myself, and Tim Cummings. And we talked a little bit about the note takers that are currently out there, what note takers and mainstream technology we used, what the issues were with the mainstream technology and the assistive technology that's out there now, and where we thought mainstream and blindness technology are going in the future.
This week on Main Menu, I'm joined by Chase Crispin and Tim Cummings, two members of the Main Menu production team. Well, this week, we're actually going to talk about note takers, and we're not just going to talk about specialized note takers. We're going to talk about mainstream devices. We're going to kind of discuss what we use, what we have, what we use our note takers for, also what mainstream devices we have. And we're going to kind of look at what tasks we use for which device. And then we're going to kind of wrap up with maybe where we think mainstream devices with regard to accessibility and specialized note-taking devices for the blind might be headed.
What were your impressions since you kind of played with the three big competitors as far, like, what did you see as advantages and disadvantages of the other two, PacMate and BrailleSense?
The PacMate, I used a QWERTY keyboard and with a 40-cell Braille display. I liked it. I always thought it was a little slow. And it seemed to me that the unit would lock up frequently. That was my experience, again, with the original unit. As far as commands were concerned, I was comfortable with the Windows-like interface. I was never crazy about the keyboard, and I've not used a lot of laptop keyboards, but for some reason, in probably 5 years of having the thing, I never was really what I felt like was proficient on that particular QWERTY keyboard. I'm not sure why that is, whether it was just the size of the keys or what it was, but I was never, ever comfortable typing on that unit. It's easy to quickly grab the note taker. It has the instant on feature. You just flip it on, pull up your file, make the changes, stash it, you know, turn it off, stow it away, and get back to work. So that aspect of the device is great. It seems in recent months there's been a lot of passion. Where do you guys see the specialized note taker market going? Do you think there's going to be, are school districts going to be able to continue to buy this stuff? And do you think there's still going to be a need for it? Chase?
As far as where I see it going, I see the current generation that people have now of note takers gradually being phased out, and I'm speaking specifically of PacMate, Braille Note, BrailleSense, Braille Plus, simply because, for two reasons. A, their operating system is pretty old. As we know, Windows Mobile is now Windows Phone 7, which is inaccessible.
Right.
For two, the hardware is fairly out of date. Most of the products have very small internal memory. The Braille Plus does have a hard drive, but none of the products have, let's say, 802.11n Wi-Fi or any of that. Now, I also see products like the iPhone and the Android continue to evolve and become more accessible. But what I ultimately see as the solution for blind people, and this is what I truly think from what people have said is what we're going to have to do is run a mainstream operating system with a lot of mainstream functions on some proprietary hardware that is up to date. Because I have an iPod Touch. I love it. I plan on getting an iPhone, and I'm very excited about that. But in school, I don't see myself being able to use an iPod or iPhone or iPad or whatever in the classroom because I don't know if a word processor app, for example, that's very advanced that would allow me to do find and replace, spell check, as well as being able to use a Braille display. I use a Braille display all the time in the classroom, almost. And to be able to use Braille, now iOS does support Braille. That's true. It's a little rough around the edges. It's not super instant. So while I would like to be able to use the iPod in the classroom, I don't know at the current time if it's possible. That most stuff is possible on it, but more advanced word processor, a very advanced with a lot of navigation, is close to being possible on iPhone and Android. Safari is very close on iPhone, and mobile accessibility has released the browser separate on Android, and that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I do think devices like the Levelstar Orion, the APH Braille Plus 18 second generation, and the unnamed National Braille Press note taker that are coming out are going to start a new path of note takers. Maybe they won't even be called note takers anymore, I don't know. But I think a lot of companies are going to start to use new hardware in an open system like Android, for example. Now, they can make that accessible, do some stuff to make that device accessible, but to be able to have new hardware and access to what you want for mainstream as far as apps and stuff, I really see that as where things are going. So kind of the blindness products as we know them and the mainstream products as we know them kind of coming together and merging for us.
Absolutely. That I agree with you totally on that. Tim, do you have anything that you want to add to that?
Yeah, just a couple things. I think that I don't think in this current market, aside from the Orion, aside from the unknown quantity that's coming from NBP, I just don't think this market can support all these note takers. And I don't know who's going to go first, but I just don't think it's happening. The other thing I think that has really started to kill the note taker or shorten its life is not only the iPod and the iPhone, but the fact that, for example, you can go out and get a netbook for a couple $100, and if you have a screen reader, put it on that netbook. And you have a fully functioning computer that's very small, that can do word processing, that can do internet, that can do email. And that is a lot cheaper than, you know, any of these other competing products. So I think we'll have to wait and see what happens with the Orion and some of these other devices. But I just don't – if Humanware and Freedom Scientific try to come out with similar devices, I just don't think the market can ultimately support all these devices because I think the market's just too small.
I think some competition is good. Like, I'm glad in a way that Levelstar APH and National Braille Press will be competing, because if there's no competition at all, there's not going to be any innovation because there's not going to be any competitors trying to do better. But right now, there are three or four, depending on how you think of it, big ones, big note takers. And then there's lots of small ones, like that Pronto from BOM, and there's lots of different ones. And as you said, Tim, the market's just not going to support. So I can see us having options as far as our note takers from different companies, but I don't see having this many note takers from this many companies with this many configurations. Like the PacMate, for example, has six different configurations, and I think the Braille Note has the same. So I think we're going to see fewer, but I don't think we're ever going to go down to one specific company. I do know people, talking about mainstream technology, I do know people that have use or do use exclusively, let's say, a computer and an iPhone. But as I said, for me as a student, I just don't, not that I know of, and feel free to tell me if I'm wrong, I don't know if there's any apps for Android or iOS that allow for an advanced word processor and that kind of stuff. So there, for many people, mainstream technology does perfectly what they need to do, and that is fantastic. I'm very glad that the different developers have made the mainstream operating systems go that far that some people can use them. But for me at this time, I do think I still need that specialized note taker.
Well, I know as a musician, I will show up to a show sometimes, and the guy that's the leader of the band that I play in, well, country music, will say, "Hey guys, I got some more shows. I need you to check your calendars." And I literally have to set my Braille Note on the edge of the stage and quickly find dates, and tell him, "Yes, I can do that one. No, I'm busy that weekend." I have added contacts and calendar entries on the iPod Touch, and it's not nearly, I mean, I can do it. It's doable, and it's very doable, very accessible. But as far as the speed of being able to quickly flip back and forth from date, where a sighted person can open their calendar and look, or I'm sure even on the iPod, more quickly scan, a blind person is going to be a little slower doing that. So I think as far as efficient, quick moving around, like you say, Chase, either in word processing or, in my case, calendar contact management, that sort of thing, I think there is still a place for some specialized products. But I totally agree with everything that's being said. I don't think that the new products are going to look anything like what the older products have looked like. I think you're definitely going to see a marriage between mainstream and specialized. There's been a lot of evolutionary change, but not a lot of revolutionary change. I mean, the Victor Reader Stream was a revolutionary change.
It was.
That was something that we really hadn't seen before. The Braille Note in its day was a, from what I understand, just a breathtaking device when it first came out, you know. But it's been a while since we've really seen something revolutionary.
And I think that there's been some pretty vocal people in the Bananas community who've talked about note takers as kind of the ghetto. And I just think that's the wrong way of looking at it. I think everyone does have a choice, and the fact that we have a great number of choices is important.
Well, as I just said, that was probably our most popular show we did this year. We received just tons of feedback. And one thing we're planning for 2012 is to kind of expand on this. We have a lot of ideas on how to best cover this very hot topic, this debate on mainstream versus specialized technology. We also have some ideas on how we're going to cover all of the note takers that are currently out there now to help you, the Main Menu listener, make the best choice for which note taker to purchase. If you have suggestions for how we can keep covering this, be sure to let us know by email as usual at mainmenu@acbradio.org.
Well, let's go on to our next thing here, and I think we were going to talk a little bit about coverage for Lion. Chase, you want to talk a little bit about Lion and our coverage on that?
As a lot of you might know, David Woodbridge, who has actually joined us on the Main Menu staff from Australia, he works for a company called Vision Australia, has provided us a lot of content on the Mac pretty much weekly, and that's something a lot of you had asked for quite a large amount of time. And Jamie Pauls interviewed David with two major things that you might remember. This was the release of the next version of the Mac OS X operating system called Lion. This is something a lot of people were excited about because there was a lot of new enhancements, both accessibility and otherwise. And in this interview, David Woodbridge kind of took us through the major enhancements and even demonstrated some things.
I'm visiting with David Woodbridge of Vision Australia, and many of you know him from this series of podcasts that we've been running on using the Mac. Some excellent work there, David. This time, we are talking about Lion, the new operating system for the Mac, which has just been released. And I believe, David, you're going to take us through a little tour of some of the really great new features of Lion, correct?
I am. First of all, I thought I might take you through some of the features of Lion itself as such, and then some of the more specific features of VoiceOver. But I'd like to say first up that you can completely use Lion in the same way that you're used to using Snow Leopard with VoiceOver. So basically what Launchpad is, if you think of your iPhone, your iPod Touch, or your iPad as your home screens, that's what Launchpad is. It's a way of getting access to applications quickly with not having to worry about where they are in your system or trying to find your applications folder. And there's a couple of ways you can get to it. The way that you can normally get to it is via Launchpad sitting on your dock. You just run it like a normal application. What I've done on my Mac Air here is I've associated it with a gesture on my trackpad, which is actually Command and then a forefinger flick up. And I've also associated it with on my Mac keyboard with right option key and Z. Don't ask me why I did Z. I just thought, well, Z's a close enough key to the bottom of the keyboard. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hold down my Command key and do a four-finger flick up.
Okay. Interact with grid, no selection, 5 rows, 8 columns address book.
Now, the really cool thing, and I absolutely love this one, is Mission Control. Because as a screen reader user, you sometimes forget how many windows you have open on your machine.
Yeah.
So your side of friends come along and go, I actually can't tell where you are, really, because you've got lots of windows open. Or you do what I do, and you keep, for some reason, every time you jot down a note, you keep opening multiple untitled windows all the time and saying text edit. And this is a really great way
of new window.
This is a really great way of finding out what things you've got open. So I'm going to launch Mission Control by doing Command and my forefinger flick down. Remember, that's my command that I've already
Skype
set
has
up
new
for myself.
Skype has new window.
Whoops. He says not doing it again. Try it again.
Mission Control. 3 item spaces list.
Okay, and I'm going to VO right arrow over to where it says Expose.
At desktop. Expose Windows Group.
Okay, Expose Windows Group. I'm going to interact.
Interact with Expose Windows Group. 18 items are Leary of the host.
Okay, so I've basically got 18 windows open on my computer at the moment. The way VoiceOver now comes on your Mac in the version of Lion is that you actually get the standard voices, including those silly novelty voices.
Yeah.
Plus you get a series of the nuanced compressed voices. So they're basically at a lower frequency rating, so they're a small file. And you've got your classics. You've got, you know, Karen and Lee for the Australian voices. You've got Daniel for the, like I'm using at the moment, for the UK voice. You've got Fiona, which is a Scottish voice. Tessa, which is a South African voice, and so on. Plus all the other languages, French, German, and so on. But basically what happens is with the compressed voices, you can choose to use them. And they probably sound a bit similar to the voices that you would normally be used to listening on to the iPhone, the iPod Touch, or the iPad.
So has Alex changed at all?
Look, I'd say he has, and this is only my personal opinion. He doesn't sound as clear as he used to on Snow Leopard.
Really?
No. Now, the other really cool, outstanding feature of VoiceOver now is that we have things called activities. And for the want of people that are used to what activities are not, they're the same thing as script files or settings or applications that Windows now uses to enhance the functionality of an application. So whereas before, when you changed all your settings in VoiceOver, it was really only for your current application. Whereas now, you can associate your settings to an application, or you can just create an activity that you want to load manually whenever you want to use a certain set of parameters that you've changed in VoiceOver. So, for example, what I've done with my Illyria program, my Daisy player, is when I switch to it, I've got it to load a activity which basically changes the voice from whatever my standard voice is currently running to the Samantha voice, and it runs faster speed. So let's press Command-Tab to Command-Tab around to Illyria.
Text edit. Skype. Illyria.
And now I'm going to release my command button, command key.
Mm-hmm.
The host window. Play pause as keyboard focus.
Nice.
And straight away. Yeah, we also have two things now for Safari. We have single key web navigation.
Yeah.
Up until this point, we had to use, you know, VO command H or with the shift key to jump forward and back by header. Or you used your quick nav, which is, you know, turning around by left and right, and then using up and right or up and left to, you know, cycle to whatever element you wanted and up and down to navigate by that element. But now what you can do is you can just press H for header, you know, B for button, and that sort of stuff now.
Very good.
And, of course, you hold it with the shift key to move backwards. So that's a huge benefit. No longer will we have people saying, oh, VoiceOver users, I've got to hold down so many keys just to navigate the internet. No longer.
Right.
So that's actually very good. And there's also another interesting feature, which I'm assuming would be useful for some people. What it is it's called Quick Search. And what it is you can, it, when you turn it on, and it's under the, it's either under navigation, or I've checked this for you later, but it's under Quick Nav Navigation. But what it is you assign it to, in my case, I've assigned it to my right command key, and then when you press another letter with it when you're on the internet, it'll jump to any element on the screen starting with that letter.
The next thing that David and Jamie talked about was iOS 5 and the iPhone 4S. And I want to say here that we really appreciate the fact that Vision Australia has been nice enough to allow us to air a lot of their tutorials that David has done from Vision Australia. And we continue to air those on a regular basis, knowing that a lot of people are looking for information and tutorials on the Apple. And so we try to offer you some of those and are really appreciative that the Vision Australia is letting us use those.
It's very high quality content. We're very glad to run it. And we're also very happy that David Woodbridge is now a member of the Main Menu team. So you might also be able to look forward to hearing some unique content that David is going to provide for us here at Main Menu.
I'm speaking once again with David Woodbridge here on Main Menu. And as usual, it's time to talk about new features of iOS, Apple's operating system for the iPad, the iPod, and the iPhone. Let's just start by talking about the main features of iOS 5 as we know them today. First of all, I think one of the coolest things is what happens when you go into a store, pick up an iPhone or an iPod running iOS 5, and triple-click the home button.
Yes, now this has actually been something I've been waiting for a long time, because as we all know with the Apple Mac, you can go into a shop, pick up a Mac, bring it home, or even in the shop, press Command key plus F5 and it runs VoiceOver. Well, now the default setting in iOS 5 will be, like you just said, pressing the physical home button 3 times, having VoiceOver on, which means when you get at home and or in the shop and you need to set up the iPhone for yourself or the iPad or the iPod Touch, you can completely do it independently. And the best thing of all, there's actually no PC, as in Windows computer or Mac, required for that setup process.
iTunes Match is going to be initially available in the US, moving to other countries when available. Talk to us about what iTunes Match is.
Let's say, like me, you've imported all your music into iTunes. So in my case, I've actually got a reasonably small music library compared to some people. I've got about 200 or 300 CDs, and I've imported all of them into iTunes. And what will happen is when you do iTunes Match, it will look at your collection. It will then match it to the songs on the iTunes store, because they've got 20 million songs on there. And they will upgrade your music to listen in better quality format. And you'll be able to access that music because it'll be a record in the iTunes cloud, if you like, that you own that music and you've got access to it. And you can access iTunes Match from any of your iCloud-based iOS devices. It's $24.99 a year.
PC-free setup. That's another really appealing thing to a lot of people, not being tethered to iTunes when you first get your device. Well, at all, I guess.
So no longer do you have to plug in your dear old device into your PC or your Mac, because we've now got, because remember before, at the moment before, with iOS 4, even to activate VoiceOver, you had to connect it to your PC or your Mac or get somebody to start to turn on for you. Yeah. Well, because we've got triple click home and then you run the PC wizard and start setting up all your stuff, then yeah, you don't actually have to go anywhere near PC or Mac. The other part of that, the PC free stuff, is of course software update, because again, at the moment you had to plug in your dear old device into iTunes and check for updates. Well, now you can do it from the device from the software button in your settings panel. And that's absolutely brilliant. And at the moment, I believe it's only done through Wi-Fi, because you really don't want to be downloading a 600 or 700 megabyte file through a 3G data connection.
So iCloud, you store music, photos, apps, books, mail, contacts, calendars, documents, music, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, now this is the exciting bit, because this is all done in the background. Once you all set this up, and it does require an Apple ID. Basically, you can sign up on the device for iCloud, and you can choose what you then want to use with iCloud. So you can choose wherever you want the mail, your contacts, your books, all that sort of stuff done through iCloud. You get 5 gigs of storage for free to store your documents on, and you can also purchase more storage if you actually need to.
Notification center.
So I haven't got it running for a mixer, but hopefully it'll pick up on the recording. Right. So if I tape my finger to the status line.
1:22 p.m. status bar item.
Okay. And then I do a 3-finger swipe down the screen.
Notification Gosford, currently 20 degrees, high 19, low 12.
Now that said notification center very quickly, because it popped up very fast.
Right.
The first thing in the notification center is actually the weather.
Nice.
So because I currently live in Gosford, that's the temperature in Gosford, of course, in Celsius. Mm-hmm. And now basically to move through the notification center, it's basically flick left or right, or swipe left or right to move it through item by item. So if I do 1-finger flick to the right.
Mail.
Hey, that's the first heading, mail, flick to the right.
Clear section, button.
That's the clear section for the clear mail section, flick to the right again.
And red, Barry Chapman, and red.
And I'm just
Twitter,
flicking through
and red.
All my notifications that I got in mail.
Vivo.
If I keep going.
Clear messages.
Okay, there's my messages notification, flick to the right again.
Clear section,
that's
button.
The clear section for the messages, flick to the right again.
And red, Chris Waller, zip, and red, Chris Waller, and red.
And if I keep going.
Phone, and red, phone.
Okay, there's my phone notifications.
And red, Chris Waller, and red, and red. Clear safe box car.
There's good old box car. Wow. Lots of people that know about. Again.
And red box car. Timeline and red box car. App and red.
Okay.
And red.
Keep going.
Reminder. Green
that's,
bin.
That's reminders. That's my green bin reminder to put on my recycling. And then eventually you get down to the dismiss notification center button. But if you don't want to do any of that, I can just do a two-finger scrub.
Messages.
And I've just escaped out of the notification center.
The reminder app.
Now, this one's actually very, very cool again. I keep saying things very cool with Apple. It's very sad.
It looks like it is, yeah.
Yeah, look, it's very straightforward. Basically, you've got an app on your main iPhone screen called Reminders. You go into it, and then it's got your existing reminders, a whole list of them, and you can check them or uncheck them as you actually finish them or you have to remind yourself about them. But when you go and set them, you basically can set to be reminded at a certain time. The reminders just pop up on the notification bar. And because they've got VoiceOver on, it reads them out automatically. But the other really cool thing about reminders, it's what's called, you can set a geofence around a particular area. So, for example, I can set a reminder that says, when I get to work, I must remember to ring a certain person. So when I come into the GPS location of work, that reminder will pop up because I'm at that GPS spot.
So newsstand, all new subscriptions for magazines and newspapers from the App Store, they get placed into this newsstand folder, right?
They do. And it's a great way to find it when you subscribe to a magazine or a newspaper. That's where those subscriptions will appear. And you can also use some of the icons in there to also go to the store and actually purchase the subscriptions to a particular newspaper or magazine. For all the demonstrations have been on the internet about Siri. Basically, Siri is your personal assistant that you control purely via your voice. And it's not just voice recognition. It's an actual artificial intelligence system. So you can do and ask it lots of questions. So, for example, you can say things like, how many days are there until Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
And it actually uses text-to-speech to feed back to you what the answer is or another prompt it might be asking you. With the new camera in the iPhone 4S, it's got an 8-megapixel camera that will supposedly work a lot better in low light conditions,
mm-hmm.
which leads me to think that when we use apps like Zoom Reader and Text Grabber to do scanning and OCR, we may be getting better results with the camera in the iPhone 4S than we do in the iPhone 4.
You know, Apple technology isn't the only thing that a lot of people are fascinated by right now. Another thing that both the blindness community and just the mainstream are fascinated by is the possibility of cars that drive themselves. And does this mean that us visually impaired people will be able to drive if the car drives us everywhere that we need to go? For the second year in a row, Harry Brown joined us here on Main Menu to talk a little bit about the latest developments in automated vehicles, and he also touched a little bit on the practicality of using these vehicles in the future.
In March of 2010, we were joined on Main Menu by Harry Brown talking about the possibility that blind people could someday drive a vehicle. And since that conversation, there's been a lot of developments in that area, and we're joined again this week by Harry.
The first one is, when I was talking with you all last year in March of 2010, I talked a little bit about the vehicle-to-vehicle communications, where the vehicle would talk to the vehicles near it.
Right.
That has to happen in order for the automation to take place between all vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the summer of 2010, the vehicle-to-vehicle process began with a committee meeting. I was part of it. I had some involvement in that. What the vehicle-to-vehicle thing is, it's using, 5.9 gigahertz, below the microwave frequencies, but it's basically high-speed communication. Vehicles will be talking to each other. The vehicle is called Here I Am technology, and vehicles would say to the vehicle in front of it or to the right or to the left of it, here I am. I'm just in front of you by 2 feet in front of you or 5 feet or whatever. I'm turning left on such a road, or I'm turning right, or I'm stopping at the traffic light in front of you. And the other vehicles would acknowledge that and stop themselves as well or make room for the other vehicles to turn, that kind of thing. They're working on it, and the cool thing is that is now being done as of this summer at 5 different testing spots in the country. The second thing is you all probably are aware of Google last October. Began to test some vehicles. They began to roll out tests on 6 different vehicles. They are testing vehicles, and they've done it since last October. The first test was in California. They were testing on California state highways from L.A. to San Francisco. These vehicles drove from L.A. to San Francisco. They had one little problem. Thankfully, there was a human being in the vehicle because the vehicle almost went through a stoplight. So that was the problem that they had last summer. So they knew that they had to continue the testing. The goal is to test this and have it come out perfectly with no human being in the vehicle. And it didn't pass that test last summer, but they continued to test at highway speed. And I'm talking 65 miles an hour here, highway expressway speed. And so they did that testing. And then we take you to 2011. The third highlight was at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit, the biggest auto show in the country. At NAIS, they did not ever before last year have an automated vehicle. Last year, General Motors, believe it or not, of all companies, GM, had an automated vehicle. It's called the ENV, the EN-V. It drives at 30 miles an hour. It's for city driving, local trips kind of a thing. And so I've been talking with GM about the ENV with some very high-up people there and telling them, that's nice, but we're going to have it drive a little further, a little faster, I mean, for city driving, because you can drive up to 45 miles an hour in the city, usually in city driving.
Right.
Not on every street, but on your busier streets, you can. GM was working on it. They had it there. They also had it at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. The next thing is the federal government was continuing the process with vehicle-to-vehicle, vehicles talking to each other. The other thing is the vehicle-to-infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The vehicles talking to the roads, actually talking to the roads through the DSRC, the short-range communication, digital short-range communication. And the road would tell the vehicle its name. It would tell the vehicle how far it is from the road, you know, like you're 30 yards from the road, or you're 10 yards, or you're 10 feet, or it's coming up the road, the road's on your left, or whatever. And it will tell the vehicle what road it is and how close and far away it is. Close or far away it is from the road.
Right.
So, and, of course, GPS has been in this as well, and GPS is getting more accurate all the time. That's one of the things that people were concerned about was, well, what if this GPS guides this vehicle and drives it off the road into a field or something?
All right.
You know, and that was a big concern. But that's getting even more accurate now as we progress with GPS and government GPS, but the military uses it as well, so they have to have it accurate. And now it's just getting more accurate every day. It's very interesting how they have this technology set up. They've got a computer in the trunk of the vehicle communicating with laser scanners and radar and cameras on this vehicle. This vehicle looks ahead, behind, to the right, to the left, etc. Now, this is not the vehicle-to-vehicle as much as the vehicle seeing what's in front of it and behind it.
Okay.
And yet, it's still working very, very well. In all its driving this year, in 2011, they have corrected what I mentioned earlier, the part where it almost went through a red light. They've corrected that, and they haven't had a bit of problem this year out in California. They have made some corrections with more accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been talking with some very high-up people at Google and working with them, trying to get this done. And it's very, very exciting. And they're thrilled that people actually care about this, because they didn't think that any person in the public would care about this thing. They thought it would just be a fad and people would just not care. Well, people have shown interest, and they were really thrilled. The other thing is you're seeing now more and more pieces of automation on these vehicles. You're seeing it on the 2011 Mercurys, the 2011 Fords, the blind spot detection. It tells the driver vehicles that the driver can't see in their blind spot, because everybody has one. And not only the blind spot detector, but the adaptive cruise control. The cool thing is, everything's going to be automated at once. The current year vehicles, whatever that is at the time, those vehicles will be sold, and they'll be fully automated. The older vehicles that year, whatever that year is, the vehicles the year before and older, will be retrofitted. And they'll probably need some tax breaks and kind of like that for the drivers to be able to get that done. They'll have to be. All vehicles will have to be retrofitted, or else you're still going to have manual driving by some people. So this way, everything is automated, and not just part of the vehicle system. The other thing is a flying car. A flying car, you heard me right,
okay,
has been invented. It's on the market. It's coming out. You're going to hear more about it. And the flying car. It also drives as well on your local streets and roads. But it flies. It has wings and propeller, and you press a button from the cockpit. If you want to make a long trip, it flies to an airport in whatever town that it's, you know, that you have.
Yeah.
The cool thing about this is I've been trying to get the folks at Google and TerraFuture together. I'm trying to set up a meeting between them, because since Google has automated the a regular car, why not automate this flying vehicle as well?
Yeah.
Now, the flying vehicle is right now going from airport to airport. People are already putting down payments on it, like a $10,000 down payment. But people are buying them, and they'll be up and about.
So we're going to start seeing, and we already are seeing, bits and pieces of this in vehicles now.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of testing that is being done, and plans to pilot some of these, pun intended again, vehicles in Nevada in as early as 2012.
Yeah, March 1st.
Okay. And for blind people, how are we going to ensure that accessibility is a part of this process?
Well, the big thing is we need to be involved. And I think one of the ways is to... Well, the wonderful thing about the accessibility is this vehicle is going to be, of course, fully automated, so we won't be driving it. It'll drive us or flying us. But we'll speak to the vehicle. You won't have to push any... there won't have to be a touch screen or anything like that. You'll just talk to the vehicle. It's going to ask you where you want to go to, say, the state, say, the city, say, the street, and the address. And or... It's either going to do it that way, or it's going to say say the name, the city and state, and then say the business, just kind of like you do on the telephone these days with some of these voice directories. So the big thing is it has all the addresses. It's going to know if you just say a business name and city and state, it'll ask you which one would you like to go to if there's more than one. So it's going to be something like that. So it'll be fully accessible for us because we're not going to have to do any touch screening kind of thing. It's just you're just going to talk to it through AI, artificial intelligence, and you're just voice recognition, and the AI part will just take over. And it'll tell you how long the trip is from where you're at now to where you want to go. And the cool thing is if we're going at that kind of speed on the long trips, I did a figuring it out from, if you went from Chicago right now, it takes 5 hours by car from here in the Detroit area. If you were to go at this 18,000-mile-an-hour speed, you'd get there in approximately 35 seconds.
Not bad.
So I talked to people about it, and they said, man, that's really cool. I said, you know, if the shuttle can do that, then we can get the technology to do that, that kind of speed. Because remember, folks, you're not, human beings are out of the equation. You don't have the human factor. Machines are so much better than humans in reaction time. A machine can react in about 1/16th of a second compared to a human being, which takes 2 to 3 seconds of reaction time. So okay. It's going to be so much better for all of us. And as far as accessibility, yeah, you'll just talk to the vehicle. And as far as driver's licenses, you won't need a driver's license because you're not going to have driver's training. But everybody will have state IDs, just like we do now. Your general public, able-bodied public, is going to have just an ID. They're not going to have a driver's license. We can get rid of all the traffic divisions we have on our local police departments. There's not going to be any speeding or going through stop signs or stoplights or tailgating or drunk driving, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to save billions and billions and billions of dollars. And they're going to be very pleased about that in Washington, I think.
Well, for those listening whose mind is boggled and perhaps they're a little skeptical, number one, it's not going to all happen tomorrow.
Nope.
Number two, remember in the days of DOS when we couldn't envision an iPad.
Absolutely.
So never say never, as I get a little older and maybe a little wiser, is becoming my philosophy more and more.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha.
And how does the whole blind driver challenge thing fit in? Is this a good thing as far as publicity is concerned, or are we getting sidetracked in some way? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, personally, I think it's good, but I wouldn't be part of it myself because as I told one person that asked me about it, I said, what about reflexes?
Yeah.
You know, when you get older, your reflexes don't go as fast as they used to go.
Right.
They don't function as fast as they used to function. So I think, personally, it's going to come to a head where eventually full automation is going to be here anyway. So it won't matter about a driver challenge because there isn't going to be a challenge.
I think this isn't something specifically for blind people. This is for everyone.
Right. This vehicle is going to be for everybody. And when people see the benefits, which are right now, there are 85 benefits that I've been hearing about and come up with, in the article that I have about it, there's 85 benefits, and they're all mostly safety benefits and economical benefits to save our government's money at all levels of government. And when I tell people about this and what we want to do to see where we want to go with this vehicle and what kind of speed on long trips and that kind of thing, people get very excited.
Chase, you did the interview actually on this one, I believe, the interview with Ricky Enger from Saratech about their cross-platform, some of their applications, and I think you talked some about DocuScan and some other things.
That's right. A lot of people have really begun to kind of venture out from maybe their one operating system that we've been using, which was primarily Windows. And the Mac is becoming a lot more popular. A lot of people are also now using mobile devices like the iPhone. So Saratech has really begun to realize that people are using a lot of different devices and a lot of different operating systems. So in this interview, we kind of talked about what applications were cross-platform so that maybe those of you who don't use Windows can still use these applications and maybe where Saratech sees cross-platform applications going in the future.
Hello, Main Menu. This is Chase Crispin, and today I'm interviewing someone who is very familiar to and very popular with the Main Menu listeners, and that is Ricky Enger from Saratech. Ricky, welcome back to Main Menu, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on Main Menu, and it's certainly going to be cool to be interviewed by you for the first time.
Today we're going to be talking about Saratech applications, and specifically the two applications at this time that have gone cross-platform, and that is DocuScan Plus and the iBlink radio app. It's worth mentioning that DocuScan Plus was originally released just for Windows, and then about CSUN time, Saratech announced that it would be available for the Mac.
Yes, we released it for Windows back in November of 2010, and it's kind of interesting because many Saratech staff members have both Windows and Mac machines, and it's not just us who have followed that trend. Many, many people have either switched full-time to the Mac or, like us, have both operating systems and want to be able to have the same functionality in both places. It looks like an app which feels native to the Mac and has all the same functionality as that for Windows. For DocuScan Plus, you pay one time, so you purchase a license for DocuScan Plus, and that allows you to run DocuScan Plus on both Mac and Windows, so you don't have to buy it twice.
You can scan something in Windows and then access it later on the Mac or vice versa. Allows it to really be a nice interface.
Absolutely.
Are there any differences in the user interface from the DocuScan version for Windows and Mac, or is the interface pretty much the same?
There aren't any differences in functionality. The interface looks a bit different on each platform just to account for the way things sort of feel natively on a particular platform. But beyond the differences in terms of navigating on Mac and Windows, there's really, again, no difference in functionality between the two products. On Windows, you either have the option of doing your OCR in the cloud, so on a server on the internet somewhere, or on your local machine where the OCR engine has been downloaded to the computer. On the Mac, there isn't a native OCR engine there, which corresponds to the same one that we're using on Windows, so you do have only the option of having everything recognized in the cloud. Now, that can be a drawback if you are not connected to the internet.
Now, I've heard a lot of rumors that DocuScan Plus may be going to mobile platforms, and I know since you're not releasing anything right now, you're not going to be able to say too much, but can you tell us anything about maybe DocuScan going to iOS or Android or any other platforms?
What I can say is that for iOS, given the current hardware, we have found it very difficult to create something that we would be happy to put our names on. Given the current hardware with the iPhone and the limitations that are placed on developers by Apple in terms of just how much low-level access you can get to the camera, we're holding off on anything for iOS. Now, having said all that, the Android platform gives access to, in many cases, hardware that has better camera support than that which you find on iOS. So at this point, I don't have a lot to say about either. The possibility certainly exists, yes.
Okay. Saratech just released within the last few weeks iBlink Radio for Android.
We said, hey, we want to be a part of this. A lot of blind people are being sort of pioneers in terms of getting onto the Android platform. No, the accessibility isn't perfect yet, but Android is not something that we can ignore. We want people to have choice. We want people to say, I can buy a phone other than an iOS device if I want to, and I can have functionality like iBlink Radio on that phone. So again, we wanted to pay attention to Android because it's going places. It's gaining traction both in the mainstream and in the blindness community. So it just made sense to say, hey, we should have our app there.
Now, there are some differences in the iBlink Radio app for Android and iOS. Can you kind of talk about these differences?
Some of the differences are actually quite nice for the Android folks, and they have to do with the fact that some Android phones do have keyboards, and they aren't exclusively touchscreen devices, so you can do things like first letter navigation as you're moving through your feed, so you don't necessarily have to scroll down through this huge list of radio stations just to find the one that you're looking for. So you'll be faster with your iBlink than your iOS friends.
And there are also some low vision differences, correct?
You can do magnification and things like that with iBlink on Android, whereas with iOS, it's displayed in whatever font you have things set as. With Android, it's a little easier to zoom in on what you're looking at.
Is there anything you can tell us as far as maybe the iBlink Radio app being expanded or another mobile app being released for something like a mobile SAMNet browser so us SAMNet users can actually access the SA Mobile Network on our iOS or Android devices?
That's definitely something that we want to do, and it all goes back to this cross-platform accessibility anywhere philosophy where it shouldn't matter what device you're using. If you've paid for a service, you should certainly be able to access that service on whatever device you have at any given time. So SAMNet is the example that you used, and that is something that we do want to do for both iOS and Android. Now, I can't give any release date. It is on the table.
Let's head on down now to Reading Ally. Did you have anything on that, Chase?
One of the biggest stories of the year was Learning Ally changing its name. It used to be called RFB&D, Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic, and this year its name was changed to Learning Ally. There was a lot of controversy on a lot of the social networks, a lot of the email lists, blogs, and such. There was a lot of confusion about why did they take the words blind and dyslexic out of their name. What was the reasons for the change, and does it make the service different? On Main Menu, we were, of course, trying to cover all of the latest stories, and we interviewed both the media relations director for Learning Ally, formerly RFB&D. We also interviewed a very longtime member of Learning Ally to see their thoughts on the new name and what it could mean for the future with the company.
Well, this week on Main Menu, I'm visiting with two gentlemen. The first is Doug Spry, director of media relations at Learning Ally, formerly RFB&D. Also, we're visiting with John Russo, who's a lifetime member of RFB&D and is a part-time sound engineer, accomplished musician, as well as a graduate student.
This year we rebranded, renamed the organization Learning Ally, and it's the same organization. It's the same mission and the same essential core services, but for an expanding group of people, an expanding group of users who have reading disabilities of different types. We no longer just serve only blind or dyslexic populations, but a whole range of people whom access to Learning materials is crucial and desired.
As the amount of people and users with different types of disabilities expanded, the organization felt that RFE&D was a little limiting because, as an organization, the desire to reach out with simply anybody with a print disability was recognized. And so to say blind only or dyslexic only was limiting. So at that time, a name change became a buzz in the air. And I thought it was an excellent decision, especially because, for example, suppose that you're an individual who came back from war in Iraq, let's say, and you don't exactly have too much loss of sight, but maybe you now experience health problems, maybe headaches when you try to concentrate too long. Well, you're not dyslexic and you're not exactly blind. So if you were searching for a book in a format that you could read without needing to focus so much on the eyes and the headaches that you get, if you saw B and D only, blind and dyslexic, you might think, well, that doesn't serve me. Now, Learning Ally, of course, Ally suggests a friend to all. And in fact, I have the website up and running right now, and I'd like to quote specifically the line that says, making reading accessible for all. So anybody with a print disability for any reason is now invited to join Learning Ally and receive their educational materials in a format that allows them to enjoy as well as educate themselves with the information that is required, but without worrying that their eyes are going to cause a problem, distracting them and causing them not to be able to read.
How many people were involved in this decision, and how did you go about making that decision?
Really, hundreds of people have been involved directly. I mean, we have thousands and thousands of members, as you know, and we literally have hundreds of thousands of members in schools, institutions, families, and individuals across that whole spectrum. You know, you can't reach all of them. We're a nonprofit with limited means, but we also have 6,000 volunteers. We have, you know, donors and stakeholders, and we have deep ties into the education community. And so what it really meant was going deep into, basically for the better part of a year, a process of, before we just even started to come up with ideas for, you know, different alternatives for the name, to understand what are our key stakeholders really thinking and what's really important to them. And, you know, we need to have this change driven by members and key stakeholders. So we created focus groups of parents and student members and teachers, volunteers, and we talked to our friends at the Department of Education. And, you know, basically all components of our community were represented in this extensive and really methodical process to study factors that would help us choose the right name. Also, you know, the word recording is interesting because, you know, we're no longer just recording. I mean, we have volunteers coming in to narrate books, but we're also getting into VText and, you know, we're getting into text files and we're moving in the direction of, you know, human audio and synthetic speech. The word ally, I mean, John referred to it very well a few minutes ago. It means a friend to all, you know, a trusted, dependable friend. In this case, making reading accessible to people who may just have a different way of learning. And the word ally is really a standard word in the English language. So, I mean, that's a fixed quantity. That's durable for the duration.
So for anyone who formerly used RFB&D and happily downloaded books, I assume there's no change. Do they have to download any new keys or anything like that for their players?
No, it's all perfectly good continuity.
Right.
I mean, we did change the website to Learning Ally, and that was a big product, but it's all the same material.
We had an interview with HIMSS. That was a rather interesting interview, and we found out about some of the newest products from HIMSS, the new smaller note taker, the on hand, and also some of their other updates. They also opened an office in the U.S. this year. Before, the distribution and tech support had all been done by GW Micro, and this year HIMSS opened their own office in Austin, Texas, and took over to tech support and their own office here in the U.S.
Hello, everyone, and thanks to the Main Menu staff for having us on the show. We're very happy to be here. My name is Jenny Axler, and I do technical support for HIMSS. And in a few minutes, I will be joined by Scott Hagley, who is our regional sales manager in Wisconsin. We have several things that we want to present to you today, as it has been an exciting, fast-paced last few months at HIMSS. We have new software, we have new products, and as many of you may know, we also have a new North American office located in Austin. Austin, Texas, which opened in November. Probably the most exciting and immediate thing we have going on is our new note taker upgrade, version 6.0, which should be released the week of May 16th. So we'll be spending a good portion of the show talking about and demonstrating the new features of this upgrade. But first, let me talk a little bit about our note taker family. The BrailleSense and VoiceSense family consists of five products. We have our BrailleSense Plus, our BrailleSense Plus QWERTY, our VoiceSense, and then our newest note takers, the BrailleSense On Hand and the VoiceSense QWERTY. Now, I was specifically asked to talk about the On Hand, so I will spend a little bit of time on that as well as the VoiceSense QWERTY. The On Hand was just released in the fall, and it is our pocket-sized note taker with a Braille display. I like to describe it as being about the size of a box of checks that you get from the bank. It's about 3.5 by 6.5. It weighs under a pound. It's about an inch thick. It contains 4 gigabytes of internal storage, has built-in GPS and compass, as well as Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. It has an 18-cell Braille display, and it takes SD cards up to 32 gigabytes, SDHC, and it also connects to USB through an OTG port, so it can serve as a host or a client device. This unit has all of the capabilities you know and love in the BrailleSense Plus, including multitasking. We have the media buttons on the front with the three modes that can be controlled globally, and it has the quietest, most comfortable Braille keyboard I've ever used in my entire life. All of the HIMS products, the Sense products, have exceptionally good Braille keyboards, but this one is the best one yet. It also comes with an external battery pack and charger, so you can actually charge one battery while you're using another. You can charge it while it's plugged in, that is possible, but you also have the option of having an external battery pack or an extra one to take with you. In addition, there's an optional LCD accessory. It's about 4 inches long. It's about a prism shape, maybe weighs, 3 ounces. It's very light and portable, and it connects through USB. So this is perfect for educators or parents who want to see what their kids are doing, or just someone who wishes to be able to have a sighted person look at what they're typing. The small size of the On Hand also makes it the perfect companion piece to your iDevice. I use mine with my iPhone all the time. It's great to be able to just throw both of them in my purse and have easy access to both. And I love the fact, too, that with the multitasking capabilities, I can have it connected to my iPhone and still use note taker functions and easily switch back and forth. Now, our VoiceSense QWERTY is also a very slim and lightweight device. This is maybe 3/4 of an inch thick. It's very thin. It's about the size of a half sheet of paper, and it is the first QWERTY note taker to contain an LCD display. And it's actually a rather wide display so that this unit can be easily used by low vision users. We intend for this unit to be ideal for low vision use. It has output through speech, input through QWERTY, and also the LCD display. So it is really ideal for either low vision users or users who wish not to use Braille. It contains specifications similar to the On Hand. It has 4 gig of internal storage. It has the built-in GPS and compass. It also has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built-in. In addition, it has Ethernet connectivity. It has the SDHC connectivity. It has the USB OTG port. In addition, it also has a full-size USB host port. And again, the smallest, slimmest, and lightest QWERTY note taker that you're going to find on the market. Okay, so let's move on to the upgrade. And now I'm actually going to bring Scott in, and I'm going to do that using one of our new features. And by the way, for those of you interested, Scott and I are both using BrailleSense On Hands.
The next thing that I have on my list here was another interview that we did. This was one of them that it wasn't necessarily strictly technology related, but it was one that was certainly popular and did have a bit of technology in it. This was an interview done with the Christian contemporary singer, Jenny Owens, who is actually blind, and she is a very well-known Christian music singer, so you'll want to check out her music. And in this interview, we discussed with her how she writes and composes music as a blind person, and also what technology she uses to get through that process.
The world is wide. You can't crawl under it. You can't climb over it. Baby, I've tried.
Jenny Owens is a contemporary Christian artist who has sold nearly 1 million albums and is a top performer on the Christian radio charts. Jenny has been totally blind since the age of 3. I recently had the opportunity to visit with her about how she uses technology in her work and daily life. Well, just let's start at the beginning. Why don't you tell us how you got started in music?
I began writing songs when I was pretty young. I think maybe 7 or 8. Not very good songs. I went to college and was a music education major.
Wow.
And I really thought that I was going to teach high school choir. I actually found a job as a songwriter before I found a job as a teacher. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm supposed to be a songwriter, because that doesn't really happen very often, especially not in Nashville.
In the daily process of writing and jotting down rough drafts and that sort of thing, what do you use technology-wise to accomplish that?
When I'm writing songs, I like to use Braille. So I have a Brailleno from Handytech that I primarily use for that. And then I have a digital recorder. I have one of the Olympus digital recorders.
Right.
The DS-60, I guess? 50? Okay. 50, maybe. One of those. And right. But I actually use my iPhone quite a bit. In fact, today I was writing, and I used my Brailleno, and I used Voxy, which is a recording app for the iPhone. In order to sort of do the paperwork and turning in songs and all that stuff, I use my PC. But I use my Mac for, you know, when I'm actually going to demo a song, I'll use GarageBand or Logic or Pro Tools or something on the Mac.
So what is a song that our listeners would know, those that listen to contemporary Christian? What's one of the first songs that really was good to you, so to speak?
Well, the first single was Free, a song called Free, and that one, I think that one did pretty well. And then If You Want Me To was a song that people called the Valley Song. That was also another song that did pretty well off the first record that people might know.
So do you work with a band currently, or are you on your own pretty much?
You know, we do a lot of dates alone, just because it's financially, you know, it's a lot easier for me to say, hey, I'll come do it by myself and play piano and right. instead of bringing in the whole band. A lot of times maybe I'll take one player, like a guitar player
sure.
or a road manager. So there's a lot of times at least one other person. When we take a full band, I actually have a tour bus that unfortunately does a lot more sitting right now than it does moving. But
yeah.
when we have a full band and we're out on a tour, we'll actually load up the bus with everyone. It's much cheaper than buying airline tickets, and we will we'll go out that way.
Now, you have a dog guide, correct?
No, I don't. No. I just have a dog.
Okay.
Yeah,
see, that was just an assumption on my part there.
No, I have a miniature Australian shepherd named Louie, who is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And he does go on the road, though, some. And what's really fun is that people in airports often think he is my guide dog, even though he weighs about 10 pounds or something.
Kind of give us some ideas of what you're working on right now.
Well, I just finished a project that we have been working on for the last 2 years, and I'm a very impatient person when it comes to projects, so 2 years was like torture for me, but I'm very excited that we spent that much time on it. And the first single just went to radio, and the record releases on August 23rd, and the record's actually called Get In, I'm Driving, which is kind of fun.
CSUN 2011. There were quite a few new things at CSUN 2011, although some people said they didn't think there was as many new things this year as maybe some years in the past.
I think we're kind of in the middle of a big change. We might be going from a period of new hardware being released all the time. I think we're kind of moving to a period of building on what we have, taking this software that is out there and enhancing it and making it work for everyone. So maybe this is the reason for some being disappointed, because there's not as much new that maybe you can touch, but we're building on things that we've already had. And we're also really working, from what I've seen, the industry is really building on different operating systems and building around what we want as consumers. And then that is not a Main Menu opinion or an ACB radio opinion. That's just kind of something that I personally have noticed, and perhaps that's the reason. And that's kind of what was talked about in this interview that we're talking about, which was actually Daryl Shandro, who a lot of you know from being a former Main Menu co-host. He was the one who was being interviewed, and he not only talked about the conference, he talked about Android and iOS like we were just doing, and he also really touched on the debate of mainstream technology versus specialized technology like note takers, and are both needed, and can our market support both?
This week I'm joined with Daryl Shandro and his wife Karen, and we are going to discuss CSUN 2011. What were you kind of looking forward to? Because I know when you go to anything like that, there's always things that you hope to see.
Well, I have a very potentially very different take when I go somewhere.
I was looking forward to meeting up with old acquaintances that I know, people that I know, and spending time with friends and seeing the exhibits. I did not go to any of the sessions. However, I did participate in a Google focus group, which I can say a little bit about. I have to be a little cautious there, but I can sort of describe what Google was doing at CSUN. So Google focus group, exhibits, and most important, networking and socialization for me.
Very good. Why don't you go ahead, since you've mentioned it, go ahead and just tell us what you can about that focus group, because I know there's a lot of interest in Google with regard to accessibility right now.
Yes. As many of you may know, the National Federation of the Blind has asked the Department of Justice to look into the use of Google Apps in the K-12 and university higher educational settings for a number of universities, because Google Apps are either not fully accessible in the case of Gmail and Google Calendar and Google Reader and things of that sort, or they're really not accessible at all, as in the case of Google Docs. So not knowing how that, whether that has to do with their presence at CSUN or not. Nevertheless, Google was very highly present at CSUN, especially on Wednesday. They held a number of focus groups for different types of users. It was very interesting. So Karen and I and our friend Allison, we all applied. A link was sent out on Twitter and elsewhere in various email lists and social media venues a couple of weeks before CSUN, inviting people to fill out a short survey with the possibility of being able to participate in a focus group at CSUN. And what was awesome was the three of us who were hanging out together at the conference all got selected for the same focus group at the same time. how awesome is that?
Absolutely.
So we went to the focus group, and we got to talk with Google, and essentially they were very much in presence at CSUN. They were in listening mode. So essentially they asked us how we use technology, how we use the internet, how we use assistive technology, and they listened. We all got to talk about our experiences, not just with Google products, which we did talk about, mm-hmm. Kind of especially in our group. I think a couple of us really focused on Google Docs, because a lot of employers use Google Docs for collaboration,
right,
on projects. So that's a very important thing to some of us. And I think that that really Google was totally in listening mode. They did not make any announcements or promises about accessibility, but I also felt like they were very receptive, and so I hope this results in some positive actions. I'm also aware that there was another more highly technical focus group for developers, and they actually kind of got into the nuts and bolts of JavaScript, Ajax, all those platforms on which Google software is made, and they talked about how to make those more accessible. Yeah, I guess I would say the real headline was a unique product called Eyeglasses by Ambutech. They had an interesting exhibit where they have these glasses that you can put on, and they're vibratory glasses. Mm-hmm. So they will help you find overhanging obstacles, things in front of you that your cane won't find. Mm. From 10 to 2.5 feet in front of you.
Wow.
And if you're going to run into a tree branch or something like that, before you get to it, your glasses vibrate around your nose, essentially. I always look for technologies that are going to just really make the world more accessible for me as a blind person.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some interesting new technologies, but I mean, I guess I didn't see something that just really totally knocked my socks off.
Some years you go to a conference, and or if you listen to the presentations later, you'll hear lots of note takers start up, and you'll recognize a little sound, and you'll be like, okay, everyone's using such and such. What were people using this year?
Well, it was pretty diverse. There were still a lot of note takers. There's a debate there about whether to use note takers or mainstream technology. There was a lot of both. I saw, there were a lot of iPhones there. A number of us were using an app on the iPhone called Heytel, mm-hmm, to communicate with one another throughout the conference. You had myself, Mika, Frank, Byron, our own, Byron Lee, who does the talk zone here on Mainstream.
Right.
And, a number of others, even Jonathan Mosen was on at one point we had this public relay. So we had this awesome little, basically like a radio channel.
Oh, wow.
You could double tap the public relay. And if you wanted to get a message out to everyone who attends CSUN and selects that public relay, then you could broadcast a message out to all the users.
Very cool.
On it. So that was kind of interesting. So there were quite a few iPhones, a lot of note takers. The Braille Note is still pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
The new Apex,
right?
Braille Note, and I really saw Braille Notes, iPhones, and a couple of Androids at the table Wednesday night, the DC Night Out dinner meeting, Byron showed us his, I think it was a Motorola Droid with mobile accessibility on board. And that was interesting. I'm not much of an Android fan at all, and we can certainly discuss that briefly. But sure. But it did work. I did see him use it. He does have a significant amount of sight, mm-hmm. and did tell me that. Well, yes, when I use the Droid, I use my sight a little bit, and when I use my iPod Touch, I really don't have to. So that kind of tells you at least one person's experience, and that experience I know has been echoed by a number of others as well. So. Means that in my belief is that with Android, we're not there yet mm-hmm. from an accessibility perspective. I think that the days of specialized note takers they have to go away. Mm-hmm. Because we have like five or six different companies, making note takers, right? We have APH/Levelstar, we have Humanware, we have HIMS, we have the Pronto, I guess, that's another one that's out there. We have a few companies, I should say, making note takers.
Right.
And we have quite a, FS, of course, with the PacMate. Mm-hmm. So we have these note takers competing with one another. But they're all, $4,000, $6,000 machines.
Right.
And they're very specialized, okay? So a new technology comes out and you want to use it, forget it. It's not there.
Right.
You're not gonna be able to use it. Your note taker is a box, and it's been programmed for you to do a certain set of tasks. And if you want to do something new, then you just have to hope that your note taker maker manufacturer is on board with that and has come out with an update, which then you can pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas with my iPhone, I want to scan money. Okay, $2 app. I just went on the App Store and had it on my iPhone in 30. Let's say 90 seconds tops.
Right.
And it's there and it's ready to go. Mm-hmm. It's ready to scan money. I mean, you can't do that with a note taker. A note taker, you're stuck with what you're stuck with. However. One of my friends said, she said, on the other hand, my note taker is instant on. I don't have to worry about a Bluetooth keyboard, a Bluetooth braille display, a Bluetooth headset, this and that. It's, I have to work. I work in the exhibit hall, and all I have to do is set my note taker down on the table and turn it on, and it's in the file I was in last, and I can just start typing away.
Mm-hmm.
And I really can't quite do that on the iPhone.
Right.
So that is the argument, sort of in favor of the note taker. It's specialized. The company knows, or at least can be potentially expected to know what a blind person needs, especially for the Braille note takers. There's a lot of better, more native Braille support in them than there will be in an Apple device, for instance. So there are benefits to note takers.
Mm-hmm.
However, Jamie and everybody, I think the issue is going to come down to economics.
And Mr. Chase, this one you have to take is the Braille Challenge, and you were in it, so who better to talk about it?
This was a fairly short piece, actually. It wasn't strictly technology related. This was another one that touched on technology, but was more of a blindness in general thing. This was an interview. I was being interviewed about Braille Challenge. As a lot of you probably know, I'm a student, and the Braille Challenge, as you'll hear in this little snippet of the interview, is a program put on by the Braille Institute for blind and visually impaired students in school, K-12, to participate in a competition to promote Braille literacy.
I'm joined this week by Chase Crispin, who is a part of Braille Challenge. And first of all, Chase, explain to us what Braille Challenge is.
The Braille Challenge is a Braille reading and writing competition. It's basically a competition to promote Braille literacy in students in school. It basically just tests in your age group your Braille literacy. There's tests, and they depend on your age group, but all grades have comprehension, reading comprehension, proofreading, and then depending on your age group, you'll have speed and accuracy, which is where you have a Bookport Plus or a Victor Reader Stream, and you listen to a recording in Braille what you hear, and then they grade you based on your grammar, your spelling, and your Braille accuracy. And you might also have Braille spelling, where you have to write the word uncontracted and in contracted. And you might also have reading charts and graphs.
Who puts this on?
It's all based out of the Braille Institute in California. And there are regional Braille Challenge competitions pretty much in every state and in a couple of the provinces in Canada. If you're one of the top 60 scorers, which ends up being, because there's five age groups, one of the top 12 in your age category, you get to fly out to Los Angeles, California for the national competition.
What sort of things will you do at national?
It's the same thing basically as the regional, same competitions, but it's a bigger deal pretty much.
Right.
when you get out there that Friday night, there's kind of an opening ceremony type thing where you just go and meet people and socialize and get to know other people. And then Saturday, all day, you're doing all the tests, the competition. And there's a big awards ceremony where they give out the awards and prizes on Saturday night.
Do they focus mostly on paper Braille, or do they actually get into electronic Braille as well?
They haven't really got into electronics, and I think it's because they don't want to have it count against people that can't afford the technology or don't have access to the technology. So you have all the competitions are Brailled out on just, you know, Braille paper. They're embossed, and then you type out your answers on a Perkins Braille writer. To learn more about the Braille Challenge, you can visit www.braillechallenge.org if you're living in an area where it's ways from where there's a regional one or something like that, and you're unable to get to where the regionals are held. You can have your TVI, or just, I think pretty much any teacher can get the preliminary contest stuff and give you the test, and then they'll send them in. Even if you don't live in a place where you can get the regionals, you can still participate.